Last week about organ transplants. Mm-hmm. I think Tasha had on the subject. The next morning, Carissa and the boy in Derek, he said he had some questions. He had two questions. One of them was about organ transplants.
Wow, okay.
Which I've never been asked before. So
okay, shame. I hope it. I don't even know. We talked about organ transplants last week? Okay.
It's amazing how much is included in Yeshus.
Yeah, no, that makes me feel good, because I keep on, every week I berate myself, why am I spending so much time on Yeshus? Then I see, maybe I don't. talking about other topics, Baruch Hashem. So that must have been why, for Hashgacha, it drew it out. Okay. Yeah, what I want to start to, I want to talk about Geiris today. But I do want to finish a little bit about Aguda Yisrael, and hopefully it won't take the whole hour. I just want to mention some very interesting secular laws in the state of New York, and the shilas about those secular laws. There are mamish shilas. In fact, Rebbe Yashiv had a psak binogeya some of the secular laws in New York that even though they're well-intentioned, they may produce a get me'usa, that's puzzle, if he did. That is, New York is really the only state in the United States that has the Orthodox population that could actually get secular laws passed in order to protect agunos. And there are two laws in New York. They're called the get laws. There is get law number one, get law one, which was passed in 1983 when Rav Moshe was still alive, and it had the haskamah of Rav Moshe. Then there's get law number two that was passed in 1996, after Moshe was nifter, and that is much more controversial, and that's where Rebbe Yashiv says there's mamish a halacha shaila, but the RCA Kedarko says it's great and wonderful and everything else. Now, get law number one was actually written by somebody that a friend of mine, someone I know very well, because he's a very, very prominent frum lawyer in the Washington area. Maybe you've heard of him, Nat Lewin. Okay. You heard of Nat Lewin? That's his famous. Famous guy. He's the only person, Rabbi Wein sometimes also, the only person who speaks both at the OU and at the Aguda conventions. normally, the people who are invited to speak are mutually exclusive. If you're one, you're not the other. He goes back and forth to both. I think Rabbi Wein did it one year also. And he was the drafter of New York Get Law Number 1, which had the Haskama of Rav Moshe. And what New York Get Law Number 1 said is the following. Now, it has to be written, you understand, the secular law can't specifically talk about gets or whatever it would be, separation of church and state and everything else. But it says the following. This is only New York. In the state of New York, any person who wants a secular divorce, who files for a secular divorce, must certify under oath that they have removed any barrier or impediment to the marriage of the other party. Now that's a bit legalese if you're not regular in that sprach. To put it into normal English, that would mean that if I'm a husband, I'm a man in the state of New York, and I want a civil divorce, I'm filing for a civil divorce, I will not get a civil divorce unless I file an affidavit that if my wife is Jewish, I gave her a get. Because if I didn't give her a get, that is called an impediment to remarriage. And if I don't...
Why is that an impediment? Only according to religion.
Yeah. So the definition, right. So again, the statute has definitions of every lashon. Impediment includes legal, religious, or conscientious barriers to remarriage. There's a shaila legally, is that constitutional? But putting aside the constitutional issue, the language of the statute is beferish, that a religious barrier to a remarriage equals the term impediment. Mimela, you as a man have to file a statement under oath that you remove the impediment. Now, what if you just want to lie? Let's say you lie and you say, yeah, well, number one, it's perjury and it's a crime, meaning to say you could go to jail for that. But number two, the statute is a little complicated, and that is that in the event the clergyman who solemnized your marriage certifies that you didn't remove the impediment, so under those circumstances, because of what's called the clergyman veto, you will not get a civil divorce until the clergyman certifies. So the way it works is, this is a procedure. This is the way it works in New York, pro forma. Every guy, in fact, even if you're a guy, you have to file this paper. You have to file a paper, I have not maintained any barriers to the remarriage of my spouse. Whether you're Catholic, Hindu, I mean, you have to file such a paper. Otherwise, you will not get a civil divorce. And if the religious person who solemnized your marriage certifies you didn't, then you will not get a civil divorce until he certifies that you did. Meaning, the judge is not supposed to be machria. In other words, if I say I did, let's say, for example, I say, well, I gave my wife a conservative get. But if the Masada Kedushin was from, he says, not a good get. The judge is not going to paskin, is it a good get or not a good get. The way it works is, once the clergyman steps in, you will not get a civil divorce until the clergyman certifies. Of course, what happens if the rabbi dies in between is an interesting shaila. It may be impossible for the guy to ever get a civil divorce, but okay, that's how it works. So, mimela, the concept would be this. Given the fact, this is New York get law number one, given the fact that many guys, even if they want to be mahagin their wives, they want to get a civil divorce to be able to be putter from a lot of things. So the svara is, we basically tell the guy in the state of New York, you cannot get a civil divorce unless you give your wife a get. So mimela, this will encourage people to give get. Now, Rav Moshe Rose, some people raise the question, but wait a second here. It doesn't say there has to be a psak based on that he's chayim. So if you're telling a guy, secularly, give a get or you will not get a divorce, is there a shaila of get ma'usa? Are you forcing a guy to give a get through a legal system when he's not necessarily chayim to give a get? There's nothing in this law that says only if the woman went to based on. So Rav Moshe wrote a tshuva like this. Denying a civil divorce is not kefiya, it is simply preserving the matzav that he's already in, and it's not giving him an extra benefit. He wants something extra, he wants to go beyond what he is right now, so we tell him, we're not going to give you the prize. That's not kefiya. Kefiya has to be, we're threatening to take away something he already has, whether it's threatening to beat him, threatening to take his property, right? Threatening to take his passport, whatever it is.
The story Rebbe said about the wedding that the father came.
Yeah,
he had a lot of child support. The same idea. But if he wants to be putter from this, so you better do this.
Right. Yeah. But this is even more putter. In the case of the child support, we're l'chala pachas, where we're actually saying, if you don't give a get, we're going to be mitzi mamon from you. Hagam is for child support. That was the rivashas chiddush. That's a kfiya yidei davar acher. Here, Rav Moshe says it's not a kfiya at all. It's only a meniya of a harvacha.
So if someone
and the miniyah of aharbacha, the Rav Moshe says it's not a get me'usa. So memela, the New York get law, you know, has been on the books since 1983. I understand from some dayanim that they feel that a lot of husbands who would not have wanted to give a get because of this law, they say a few hundred, maybe hundreds and hundreds of men have given gittin. Now, if I can put on a lawyer's hat for a moment, I would say, legally, it's a very questionable law, because it seems to violate, I'm not going to raise the question, because if there's such a law that helps Agunos, that Alpi Din is good, I mean, I'm not going to be Ma'arer. But legally, there is a question that it violates separation of church and state. I mean, you're getting the state of New York, a secular state of New York, basically telling husbands, hey, you either give a get like you're supposed to, or we're not going to give you a secular benefit. I mean, what if New York were to pass a law that says, if Yidden aren't Shomer Shabbos, you know, you don't get employment benefits. You know, I mean, they obviously couldn't do that. They obviously couldn't say, if you don't keep kosher, you know, you lose your tax deduction. That wouldn't be shayach. All right, so it's interesting that nobody has taken this to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is good. I don't know why they happen, because all sorts of things people always take to the Supreme Court. If it ever got to the Supreme Court, it's not so pashut that the law would be constitutional, but as I say, if Alpi Din it's good, then Alpi Din it's good. So we hope that nobody challenges it. It's been around a long time. It's been around since 1983, so I assume that nobody's going to start.
You can't get a civil divorce from any other state. Huh? If you're in New York, or you can't get a civil divorce.
Well, the truth of the matter is you can, but you have to establish residence. So it's not impossible to circumvent the law that way. Let me mention another nekuda. There are a few chesronos in the New York law. Chesaron number one is, it only applies if, let's say, the man is the one filing for divorce. There's no palginan nemanus in civil divorce. Meaning to say, like this, it's not possible for a state to grant a divorce for one party and not for the other party. In other words, there's either a divorce or there isn't. So New York says if the man files for divorce, a divorce will not be granted to either side. A divorce will not be granted unless he removes the barrier. Okay, so what if she wants to get out? So she files a civil divorce. Well, b'chiyai gavna, if she's not maintaining any barrier on him, she will get the civil divorce. But once she gets the civil divorce, memela, he gets the civil divorce, right? So in a sense, if he has the energy, he can just wait it out until she gets so disgusted that she wants a civil divorce. In the middle of the whole New York get law is not going to apply, etc. By the way, New York was very interesting for many, many years. It's not nogeya this, but for many, many years, New York was like Beis Shammai, right? Beis Shammai says at the end of Gittin that a man can divorce his wife only if it's matzah by erbas tavar, only if he committed adultery. So for many years, New York was the last state that said you could not get a civil divorce unless there was adultery, which means even if both people hated each other and they both wanted out, they could not get out. That was Mamish's situation. They could not get out. So there was a whole industry in New York of fake adulteries. In other words, they would actually hire a private eye to take a picture of a man and a woman in a hotel, just to be, and you know, these are people who wouldn't commit adultery. They didn't commit adultery, but it was like a fake adultery, and that is how they got it. Now, today in the United States, in all 50 states, civil divorces could be based on irreconcilable differences. You don't need, it's called no-fault divorce. I just want to say that Louisiana, which has a very, Catholic religious population, they wanted to pass a law like this. This is just a strange law, that when you apply for a marriage license, you can get two different types of marriage licenses. You can get a regular marriage license that says regular divorce, or you get what's called a covenantal marriage license that says this is a higher level of civil marriage, it can only be dissolved by adultery. And you choose, b'shas maisa, what type of marriage. But what happened was they saw this was not conducive to shalom bayis, because husband and bride and groom are applying for a marriage license. So the clerk asks them, okay, what do you want? Do you want the covenantal marriage or you want the regular marriage? So a wife says, well, of course, covenantal marriage. And husband says, well, you know, maybe regular is good enough. You know, it wasn't good. So they dropped that.
Why do they want it?
No, because they wanted to create a madrega of marriage that it wasn't so easy to get a divorce. They thought there was too much kalas reish.
They hold you not allowed to divorce before.
No, that's the Catholic Church, I understand, but something with siblings. No, there's the Catholics pushing them, at least even in secular law. Yeah, no, you're right, Catholic Church can't get divorced at all, but secularly there is. So, but they wanted to pass a law that even secularly it made it harder to get divorced, but they dropped that. Okay. Now, let me mention...
So,
yeah.
If an employer, let's say, tells an employee that he's not giving him a promotion or higher paycheck unless he divorces his wife, that's not called kvia?
So it depends. Even though it's a menias harevach, but if he has a contractual right to be paid, to be minus, even though he didn't get the money via dayan, but if the pshat is he has a zechus to be paid, so that would be called kvia. Masha ein kein, if he's terminable at will, if I could fire him at any time, and I'm saying I'm not going to be mamshich the job, that would not be. Yeah, you're right. It all depends on whether he has his chayvus, if he has a shibud, if he has a right, his chus already. Now, let me mention New York get law number 2, because this is a real, real controversial law. This was passed in 1996. Again, this was, 10 years after Rav Moshe was nifter. So Rav Moshe did not... Paskin on this at all. In fact, really nobody told them Paskin on it. That was the problem. They passed the law and then they asked Shilas afterwards.
Who's trying to push it?
There were lay people in New York who wanted to help Agunas, and the head of the, in fact, unfortunately now he's in trouble, he's a firm guy, Sheldon Silver. Have you heard of Sheldon Silver? Sheldon Silver is a very, very, he was the head of the speaker of the New York Assembly, a very, very prestigious position. He's a religious Jew, and he did many, many things for Jewish causes and religious people over many, many years.
Isn't that from David Feinstein? Isn't he close with him?
He is close, but for some reason, I don't know why he didn't ask at the time. He didn't ask at the time. In fact, he was very surprised that there was a snagdus afterwards. So now Silver, I think, has he been convicted? And I know he was indicted and on trial for things. I don't know what happened. But be it as it may, you'll hear the second law, and then I hope you'll chat the nafkamina between the first law and the second law. The second law is dealing with alimony and property division. Now, what does that mean? When a couple gets divorced in secular court, again, all pidin, you're not supposed to go to secular court, but when they get divorced in secular court, so the court determines how you divide property up. How do you divide the house? How do you divide pensions? How do you divide bank accounts? Now again, I'll pidyon, you're supposed to go to a basin, but lamaisa, unfortunately, many people go to archives. Now, in the law, there are like a million things the judge looks at in how to divide property. Who has more education? Who has more ability to work? You know, all of these things. And the court can make all sorts of shikulim. The court can go 50-50. The court can go 70-30. The court, this is called equitable distribution. The court can mamish do whatever it wants based on all of these factors. Okay, so there's like 15 factors there. New York law number 2 added an extra 16th factor, that the court, any judge in New York, has the right to take into account whether or not the husband is whether or not one party is maintaining a barrier to the remarriage of the other party, as defined in New York Get Law number 1. Now, to put that in regular English, what that means practically is the following. If I am a secular judge, in the state of New York, and I know it's been brought to my attention that the husband didn't give his wife a get, I, as a secular judge, even if I'm a guy, can tell the husband, okay, husband, your alimony will be $500 a week if you don't give a get, and it'll be knocked down to $300 a week if you do give a get. Or I could say, if you give a get, you'll get 50% of the house. If you don't give a get, I'll give your wife the entire house. Up to you. You can do what you want. You can give a get or not give a get, but if you do not give a get, your alimony will be doubled, or if you don't give a get, I will give all of your ownership of your house to your wife. Now, this is New York Geth Law number 2. Now, in many ways, from a purely secular standpoint, it is actually a much stronger law than Geth Law number 1. Because Geth Law number 1 only tells the husband, you're not going to get a civil divorce. Well, let's say he's happy to have an affair, you know, l'mai nafkamina. Here, we're basically telling him, your alimony will be doubled, or you'll lose your house. But, so the RCA is really, really happy with this. Oh, great, 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 you know, this is New York protecting agunos and the like. But many gedolim, and Rebbe Yashiv was the most important of them, said, pum fakert, for a secular court to tell a husband, you either give a get or we're going to be mechayev you $1,000, and if you give the get, it'll only be $500. That is mamish a get musa, because unlike get law number 1, where you're simply mineya a harvacha, here you're mamish taking away. And therefore, Rebbe Yashiv said, any get that is given because of a judgment of the secular court that if you don't give the get, you're going to double your alimony, would be a get ma'usa, and the get would be pasul. Now, if there was a psak din that he's chayev to give a get, then enochanami, the woman could use this. But anyone, any woman that tries to use this, a woman that uses this without getting a psak based, and if the husband's mechayev to give a get, the get Ravel Yashiv Paskins was a get ma'usa. And it's not daima at all to New York Geth Law number 1. Now, I've mentioned it before. I'm sure many of you have heard of it. You've heard of Rabbi Bleich, Rabbi Yehuda David Bleich, J. David Bleich, a big, big Talmud Chacham. He truly is. Although he's at YU, but YU has many. YU has actually many Talmud Chacham. I don't even want to say although it's YU. I mean, so Rabbi Bleich took an extreme position, which is more than Rabbi Yashiv, and I don't think Rabbi Bleich is right. Although, I mean, I'm offering the Tachas Raglov too. Rabbi Bleich said that even if the woman didn't go to court, Rabbi Bleich said, even if a man just gives a get to his wife, since he knows that if he doesn't give a get to his wife, she could go to court and double his alimony, Rabbi Bleich says every get in the state of New York since 1996, he says, I don't know if it's true, he said he will not be Masadar Kedushin for any woman that got a get in the state of New York after August 1996. Because he said that every get, I think it's actually crazy, it's pretty crazy. Because his argument is, if the man didn't give a get, she could go to court and have this done to him, so Mamela he acted under duress, it's a get ma'usa, unless there's a psak based in. Now, Rabbi Yashiv didn't say that. Rabbi Yashiv just said, if Lamai said there's a court decision, and he's giving the get because of a court decision, that Rabbi Yashiv says is a get ma'usa. But to say, because she could go to court, I mean, that's like saying, well, she could always hire, you know, she could hire goons. I mean, you know, you're not going to say, because she could do something, that makes it a get ma'usa. So I'm not sure, it could be Rabbi Bleich said it, Bederech Guzma Bialma, just to communicate that the law is halachically problematical. But you see, it's so fascinating that even when you have a secular law that tries to help B'nai Yisrael, that tries to help a well-meaning, a firm guy, you know, tries to get it through. But you see how important it is in the secular world. You have to be miyayetz with gedolim too. In other words, there's mamish halachic issues on such a law. New York Law 1 is not the same as New York Law number 2, huh?
So if they do go to court, and this is the judgment that they get, then what would happen now? They can't get rid of the divorce.
So according to Rebbe Yashiv, a get could not be written unless the woman is mecheles on her rights. In other words, she would have to give a shtar mechila. She would have to say, "I am mecheles on my rights under this statute." Otherwise, it would be a get ma'usa. Now remember, she can't say I'm mocheles if I get a get, because that doesn't make sense. She has to be mocheles before she gets the get, right? Now at that point, she's running a big danger. Husband says, thanks a lot, and forget it, you know. But according to Rabbi Yashiv, she would have to take that chance, because this is a get musa. Unless there's a psak based in, because then Goyim could say, I say, Mashi Yisrael, Omrim Lach, So then you could use the secular court if it's in order to make him comply with the Pesach Beis Din. Yeah.
If it needs the confirmation of the Rav who, you know, from Sadi Kedushin, and that Rav follows Rav Yashiv, so then the Chari, this would never become a problem, because the Rav would always say, well, he's not removing the impediment by giving a get, because this wouldn't be a valid get. So Chari, those getting would never be given.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So only if there's be someone who goes with the RCA, then you get into problems.
That's correct. Actually, that's been suggested. In other words, if there was a Haredi or a Rosh Yeshiva who follows Rebbe Yashiv, he could simply say, although, no, that's a little sure, I'm not sure you're right. In other words, you want to say, he could say, well, I can't give a get because any get I would give would be puzzle. But on the other hand, the tiny is the only reason it would be puzzle is because you don't want to give the get, right? So you can't say, I want to give the get, but I can't because I don't want to. You know, when the reason why you can't give a get is because you don't have ratzon to give a get, I don't think you'd be able to tiny under the statute. It's not within my koach, you see.
But he hasn't removed the
yeah, but he hasn't removed the impediment. He hasn't removed the impediment because he doesn't want to. In other words, so you know. But actually, that was Rabbi Gleich's solution. Rabbi Gleich's solution is he should give a get that's pasul, and then he can give a second get that's kosher. Meaning, by once he gives the get that's pasul, he has complied with the direct. In other words, he gives the get that complies with the statute, and then he can give a second get that complies with the halakha because the kenas is already off. Huh? On the other hand, I mean, that also doesn't make a lot of sense because so he'll give a pasul get and then he doesn't have to give the kosher get. Then, you know, you don't have any. So what's going to be mechayim to give the kosher get? Okay, but these are the two. These are the two laws of New York to be aware of. The RCA has taken the position. New York get law number 2 is perfectly good. Now you should know that something like New York get law number one, which Rav Moshe did say was good. There is a law like that in England. And there's a law like that in South Africa, and there is a law like that in Ontario province. That's the part of Canada that Toronto is in, and the like. So this type of law is spreading. They tried to pass a law like this in Maryland, I remember, and the Attorney General of Maryland was a Jewish guy, Stephen Sachs, and he came out against it. He said it was unconstitutional. He says he was not going to allow this law in Maryland, but I know Rabbi Neuberger in Israel. Tried years ago to get that law passed.
Let's see, I have law number 1. Do you really need law number 2?
Well, they tie. It could be you don't. I mean, as I say, the but they didn't tie that get law number 1 was very good. You didn't need get law number 2. But
he's not planning getting remarried. So.
Yeah, but they said get law number 1 doesn't work if the woman files for divorce, and it doesn't work if the man doesn't care about a civil divorce. Sometimes they don't care. You know, so it depends. So they claimed that certain people would be covered by the second one, who wouldn't be covered by the first one. So that was the nakuda there of the New York get law. Okay.
Do we have like separate like marriage registries between modern Orthodox and Jews?
Not yet.
But, I mean,
although when I get to Gayrus, maybe we ought to. That's going to be.
But there's already two reasons I think so far where some like Gittin could be possible.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, it's a serious issue. You need to keep a cheshbon of these things, which means
rabbis hold on to the Gittin.
No? But they didn't hold on to the Gittin. A woman never gets the physical get. A woman gets a ksav, a p'tur. Yeah, but again, I mean, the physical get doesn't answer this question. We would have to know, was the get given because of a decision of the secular court? I mean, that's not going to be in the get. Looking at the get is not going to tell you anything, as it were. Okay, all right. However, I will say this. I mean, in defense, I think that maybe this is not going to be a tremendous problem. Because Rav Mesadre Gittin, I mean, who writes a get? The average young Israel rabbi doesn't write a get. So a typical Mesadre Gittin will follow Rav Yashiv's Pesach. So Mimela, it's Lamaisa less of a problem because you're not going to have that many Gittin written by RCA people who don't follow Rav Yashiv. I mean, if you take someone like Rav Willig, Rav Schechter, I don't know if Rav Schechter even writes it, but Rav Willig, Rav Schechter, I mean, they follow Rav Elyashiv. So that's why it's not like, except unless you go with Rav Leish, which is kind of a crazy position, it's not like you have a lot of gittin out there that are puzzle under Rav Elyashiv's psak. Pumpakert, you have a lot of gittin that were not written because of Rav Elyashiv's psak, but not that there are puzzle gittin, because Rav Masadri gittin are not going to write based on this. Which means the law is not accomplishing, even on the second, it is not creating more gittin, because the Masadri gittin are not going to write it, because Rav Elyashiv held it was...
Do you know what position is on this?
I don't, but my guess is that he would follow Rav Elyashiv, but I don't know. Rav Nutzer kind of hard, is sometimes, is in his, how old is he, 95? He's an old man, he's a Zaken. He's still full of surprises. So, with the Tamar Epstein and the like, so whatever, okay. So sometimes it's unpredictable. You know that Rav Nutzer Greenblatt started yeshiva last year? It's amazing.
My friend
thing.
Went there.
Huh?
Yeah.
Rav Nutzer Greenblatt is in Memphis. He's a big Talmud of Rav Moshe, big, big Talmud Chacham. That's his nephew. So he's Rav Ephraim Greenblatt's uncle. But they're both like a team in Memphis. And he's like Masader Kedushin for the whole southern United States. He probably does the most gittin in the United States. He's a paisek and a very, very chashuv person. And he lived in Memphis all of these years. Like, you know, there was nothing really in Memphis, but that's where he was. And when he was like 93, he decided he would like to have talmidim. He'd like to have a yeshiva where he could give shiurim. So he started like a little kibbutz. You said you had a friend who went like a little kibbutz
really
of guys,
bad.
Like 10 or 15 guys. They would just like show up, and he would give them a shiur every day. I don't know what they did the rest of the day. I guess they had their own dorm, and he wasn't like a yeshiva with a dorm and all that. But you know, they would come just to hear like. It's not the same thing. It's not the same madrega. But like people would go to the Brisker Road, you know, just to hear a shiur, but there was no real yeshiva. So he did the same thing. So people would go. Just a lot, a lot of shemesh. I mean, he knew a lot of, he was very close to a lot of gedolim. I mean, just, it was probably be very, tell you the truth, it was intriguing. I was thinking, gee, maybe I ought to go to Memphis for a few months. It would be very, very interesting. But, he doesn't dress like a Rosh. You know, he dresses like you, like a balabas in Memphis would dress, you know, like, whatever it is, colored shirt, you know, this and that. But he's a very, very chashuv, very chashuv person. His nephew is also Rav Ephraim Greenblatt, Rav Rav Ephraim, so many chalakim, also a tremendous Talmud of Rav Moshe and Rav Shach and other gedolim as well. Okay. So now we're going to begin. Maybe we should make a siyum on this issue a little bit. But now we're going to begin a little bit about a discussion of geiris. And geiris in Befrat in Eretz Yisrael is a tremendously difficult and important topic. You have hundreds of thousands of Russians who come to Eretz Yisrael, and many of them are not Jewish. Maybe most of them are not Jewish, because over 70 years there was intermarriage and everything else. So the Russian governments or the Soviet Union regarded them as Jews, but al pi halacha, they're not really Jews. Intermarriage with goyim and the like. And the state of Israel wanted to kind of make them Jews, and there were all sorts of quickie conversions and rabbanut conversions, and in which there was no real Kabbalah mitzvahs. And then we have other batei din that are under the rabbanut that invalidate the conversions. I mean, it's interesting that something that the rabbanut itself said was okay, other batei din invalidated. So I just want to go over what the nekudas of the shaila are, both here and in the United States. And again, this is nogeya because. You will have talmidim and people that approach you that are not Jewish, either because they're stam not Jewish, or because their father is Jewish and their mother is not, or they actually think they're Jewish, because in the Reform movement, if either parent is Jewish. In fact, there are two problems you'll find from the Reform movement on geiris. One is, if the father is Jewish, they will treat the child as Jewish, even if the mother is a goy, a gomor. And in fact, they have an interesting cheshbon. The Reform movement claims, which is very, very fascinating, that patrilineal descent was the original halacha of Judaism, and matrilineal descent is a later innovation and change. Now, the emesis, there is actually some truth to what they're saying, because there's a Ramban. The Ramban says, "Kaidem matan Torah, kaidem matan Torah, Yichus went after the father and not the mother." In fact, the Ramban learns that this was the shaila of the Ben Ish Mitzri. Remember the Magadev, the Makalom of Baruchas Hashem. So what does the Torah say? He was the son of an Egyptian father and a Jewish mother. So they didn't know what halacha they should do. So the Ramban says very beautifully. He says, what was the shaila? So listen to the Ramban. Because a ben noyach that's mevarech es Hashem is chayiv misa too. But the chayiv misa is sayif, you decapitate. A yid that's mevarech es Hashem, the einish is skila. But since this guy was born before Matan Torah, we go buster the father. So do I say I go buster the father because he was before Matan Torah, in which case I would do dinei b'nei noyach? Or do I say, now that the Torah was given, the halacha is going to be changed, even for the people who were born before him? It's a very lamed shaila. It's not stamazai. They didn't know what the einish was. That might be true for the Makayshesh. But for the Magadev, they knew, but they were mesupik about this problem. So the Reform movement is right, that it is an innovation. Matrilineal descent is an innovation, but the innovation happened at Matan Torah. Now, I want to point out, though, that even l'shitasam, it's really krum. Because what do they claim the innovation? The innovation, they say, was in the days of Ezra. Because in the book of Ezra, when the Yidden came back, when some Yidden came back, after the 70 years of exile, of Galus, so many Jews had intermarried with non-Jewish women, and Ezra sent away the non-Jewish women and their children. So the Reform movement says, oh, this is a chiddush, that Ezra was misakein matrilineal. So even l'shitasam, which is bechlal not emes anyway, it's from Ezra. They call that an innovation? Well, what do you call the whole Reform movement that started, you know, no later than, you know, 1820? You know, that's not an innovation. I mean, Ezra was 2,000 years before that. Okay, so one problem you're going to have.
This means only some divorce. The Jewish women not divorce the non-Jewish men, but the Jewish men divorce non-Jewish women. That's cool.
Yeah, the way the pasuk describes it, the Jewish men had to send away the non-Jewish women and the children But it doesn't say the Jewish women sent away their children. So okay. Now, according to us, Ezra was just following the halacha from Matan. Torah.
What's taka the makar for that? Sorry, for
mother. For which one?
Then we go bust the mother.
Yes, yeah, so it's a drasha because it says, "Bitcha, don't give your daughter to the Kananim, ki yaser es bincha, because they will entice your grandson away from Hashem." So we darshan that it's only your grandson if it's from your daughter who marries a Kanani, but if it's your son who marries a Canaanite, it's not even your grandson. Right? The Gemara has a drasha, ki yaser es bincha. Now, yeah.
Asnas the Geras going
to say again.
Asnas,
because it came from according to the Ramban, yeah. According to the Ramban, it might be Shayach because Asnas came from Shechem, and we go be Uma before Matan Torah. We go Buster the Umais. But you know, the other thing it reminds me of a Maisa they say with Rav Yitzchak Ochanan, that somebody once went to Rav Yitzchak Ochanan, a Maskil, Laskala, and said to Rav Yitzchak Ochanan, why are you religious Jews so old-fashioned? You have to change with the times. You have to go back to the... you have to look at the new ways. So he said, no, you guys are the old-fashioned guys because mitchila evdei avodah zarah hayu aviseinu. We used to be evdei avodah zarah. You're going back to the old drachim. The kaidem matan Torah drachim is mitchila. Okay. Now, now the thing is this. So one problem you're going to have with Reform is patrilineal descent. I mean, they go with either one, and the other is spurious gerus. They do gerus, right? They do gerus as well, and obviously the gerus is no good. So you're going to meet a lot of goyim. I mean, even here in Yeshiva or Samach, we have all the time people who are the products of questionable gerus, and you know, things have to be investigated and the like. So let me go over what the Yikar Shaila is. Oh, everybody knows that a Geiris, number one, requires a Beis Din, and the Beis Din themselves have to be Kosher Dayanim. Now here, I don't want to get into this so much, I think I've mentioned it before, according to many of the Pashkevilin at least, if you have an iPhone or a smartphone, you're a Pusel Dayan, which has a lot of implications regarding Geiris. But let's assume, right now at least, that a normal Orthodox rabbi would qualify as a Kosher Dayan. What about a conservative and reform rabbi? Could they possibly be a kosher? No, you do not need smicha. You don't have to be a rav. Although, once again, because of the chaimer and the complication of the halachas, there should at least be one person who knows what he's doing. But technically, even a beis din of edyaitis is kosher legiur. Now, what about a conservative reform? So here there's a very big nekudah. Obviously, if the conservative or reform guy is a mechalal Shabbos, the Mechalo Kashrus, puzzle, that is clear. But what's a little complicated, not so much reform is pretty much universally, they're not keeping mitzvahs. But in the conservative movement, it sometimes is a little complicated, because there are conservative rabbis who in their own personal life are Shomer mitzvahs. They will not drive on Shabbos, they will not be Mechalo Shabbos, they keep Taras HaMishpacha, and they keep kashrus based on Orthodox standards, right? Why are they conservative rabbis? Well, a lot of them took jobs, you have to know. In the 1950s, many, many Orthodox rabbis took jobs in conservative synagogues.
Don't why your people think it's like a mitzvah to be a conservative rabbi? They're doing kirim?
Well, they used to give them. Rav Soloveitchik used to give, he never gave permanent heterim, but he would give up to 6 months. He would say, if you put in a machitz within 6 months, otherwise you have to leave. You know, Rabbi Riskin, I don't want to talk about his present career, which is more controversial, but Rabbi Riskin, you know. Okay, he's the rabbi of Efrat, Rav Shlomo Riskin. He used to be Steve Riskin in those days. But Rabbi Riskin was a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, right? A Talmud of YU. And he took a position in a conservative synagogue, Lincoln Square, which was totally conservative, no mechitza or anything. And Rav Soloveitchik said, you can be there for 6 months. You shouldn't daven there. You know, daven be yechidus, but you can, you know, officiate and give sermons. But if you don't get a mechitza within 6 months, you have to leave. And he did put in a mechitza. Whether it's kosher is another question. I'm not going to get into that either. But he did put in a mechitza. The shul is officially, you know, an Orthodox shul. You know, he did a lot. In fact, there are many Bali Tshuva who came through Lincoln Square, both under Rabbi Riskin's influence and under Rabbi Ephraim Buchwald, you may have heard of, who's a very big koach in Kiruv Rechaikim over many, many years, over 30, 40 years already. So, you know, credit, they deserve credit for what they've done. Then Rav Riskin came to Efrat, and he's created a new part of trouble here in Efrat. So Rav Soloveitchik never gave people a permanent heter, but a lot of people took a permanent heter. A lot of people did stay, and the like. I mean, there's a rav in Maryland. He's been the rav of a conservative shul. I mean, he's retired now for 50 years. He was rav 50 years, conservative shul. He's a musmach of tells, and all of his children are Rosh Hashivas, Talmidei Chachamim. I mean, and I know many, many families that he was mashpia to keep kosher and to be Shomer Shabbos. So what are you going to know? I mean, on one hand, if you would ask an objective shaila, are you allowed to kind of, you know, be a rabbi of a conservative shul for 50 years? The psak would be, no, you can't. On the other hand, you know, how will Hashem judge us? I mean, he was makarev hundreds of people. He was maimed a door of B'nai Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, some things only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can decide. It's not really biyadeinu to decide such a thing. I mean, this person is really a tzaddik. I mean, he really accomplished so much for Torah and for Klal Yisrael, even though in some ways, you know, okay. All right. So what do we know? So here's the question I want to ask: is there an automatic psul? We're looking at dayanim now. In other words, if somebody is a shomer halacha, but they have a position of conservative or reform rabbi, does the institutional affiliation gufa make a person puzzle? So the Emma says, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Rav Yeshua Ber's brother, held that, no, at least Misafek, he held, if a geiris was done by a conservative rabbi, of course it depends who else he used on his beis din, but if all of the beis din were people who are Shomer Shabbos, even if they would be defined as conservative Jews, he says, there is no such automatic psul as conservative Jew. You're either Shomer Shabbos or not Shomer Shabbos. So according to Ron Soloveitchik, he was chayshish at least l'chumra that virtually every conservative conversion, unless you know, maybe they were Shomer Shabbos. But Rav Moshe had a tshuva the other way. Rav Moshe was very, here, he's Mekel actually, but Rav Moshe had a shita that the very hishtatfus in the institution called conservative Judaism was a hishtatfus in kfira, in Torah min HaShemayim. And therefore, the same way, if you happen to have a kaifer who happened to keep, you know, all the mitzvahs just because he likes, you know, resting on Shabbos, whatever, the fact that he may be keeping Shabbos accidentally doesn't blive Shemirah Shabbos. So then somebody said to Rav Moshe, okay.
He says he's doing it for
yeah, yeah. Somebody then said to Rav Moshe, well, okay, I understand if somebody believes the conservative philosophy. But what if he doesn't believe it, he's just doing it for the money? No, that's not your question. So Rav Moshe says, that's even worse. a person who b'chlal sells out, he knows it's false, that's even worse. He's a mesis or media. Now you're asking a different question. You're talking asking a different question. You're asking a question, he doesn't believe it, and he's not doing it for money, but he's doing it like the rabbi in Maryland. Like the rabbi
in
Maryland.
He says very clear, he says his congregants, I don't believe in this, but yep. I want to be a rabbi here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It might be different. I don't know.
Or are there branches of conservative Judaism that some define this term in Shemayim and don't reject it? Like I saw Lieberman were to convert someone, Moshe Pasha would probably accept the.
You know, I don't know. That would be that's really, I think, the Shaila. That's good for the Shaila. Meaning to say, Rav Moshe deals with two types of conservative, you know, Orthodox people who are conservative. One is people who believe in their philosophy, and Rav Moshe says that's kfira. And the other is people who don't believe it, but they're doing it for money. So Rav Moshe says, in both of those cases, even if you're a Shomer Shabbos, you are puzzle. Now, the third case, which both of you are raising, is a case that Rav Moshe didn't deal with. And that is the Orthodox person who doesn't believe in it and is not doing it for money, but he's actually doing it l'shem shemayim. He's doing it because he wants to be makariv people. And even if he stays there many years, he does not just the 6 months. Again, the rabbi in Maryland stayed there for many, many years. He sent all of his kids to hotels in Israel, and as they say, you know, in fact, he spent half the day learning in yeshiva. You know, I mean, again, it's just hard for me to even imagine, but this is what he did for many, many years. Or you take somebody like Rav Shaul Lieberman, who was a big Talmud Chacham, a big, big Talmud Chacham, in Yerushalmi and Tosefta, maybe the biggest in the world. By the way, Rav Lieberman was the Chazanish's cousin. And he was close to the. I mean, the Chazanish didn't like what he was doing, but he had a relationship with the Chazanish. Chazanish used to say, "Why don't you, you know, leave that place, you know, whatever?" But they had a relationship.
Founded the Jewish Theological
Seminary. No. He didn't. No. He didn't found it. Jewish Theological Seminary was founded in 1890. But Rabbi Shaul Lieberman was invited to teach there, and he became the. Kind of the Rosh Hashiva, Lahavdil became the Rosh
Hashiva. Where is this place?
New York, Manhattan, near Columbia University.
What are they doing?
It's the seminary for conservative rabbis. Jewish theology.
You get like smicha to be a conservative rabbi?
That's correct. If you want to be a conservative rabbi, you either go to YU change, or you go to JTS, as it's called, right? So the Reform Movement has Hebrew Union College, which has a branch in Yerushalayim. They have a very good library. Sometimes they're a Haredim who kind of go there.
I was in JTS, and I was looking at Chazanim, and there's a girl in jeans and towels.
No, that's it. I mean, listen, what can I tell you? JTS is one of the best Sfarim libraries in the world. and Hebrew Union also. I mean, I don't know how many people are using all that stuff, but it's there. If you're a person who really needs some rare svarim that are hard to find, that's where you go. Hebrew University too. I mean, many Haredim would never go to college, but they go to the library. That's what it is.
The one next to
King David Hotel, isn't it? The YMCA.
Right, so that one also is a little library.
And it's much smaller. So you know, there are better places. I mean, there are better places. But in the United States, Hebrew Union College is one of the great libraries. Harvard University is one of the great libraries.
For Svarim,
if you want Svarim, Harvard University is a wonderful one. But I think to myself, you know, Chazal say, Hakol Tali B'Mazel. Afilu Sefer Torah Shebehecha. You know, I think to myself, how come some Gemara gets to be in a Beis Medrash and some Gemara gets to be Hebrew Union College? It's the same Gemara. Like, what's the sechus of one to be there, one to be there? It's like a chaval. You have Rachmanis for the Sefer. Why it winds up in those places? But you never know. Maybe it'll inspire somebody to tshuva. You know, who knows what will be. So you're right. I mean it's a really good question. If Rabbi Lieberman were to be Magai or somebody, would Rav Moshe Paske? It's really your question, because he was also there, mainly the Shem Shemayim. He was a very chash of a person although I'll tell you a story that my Rosh Hashiva used to say, Rav Ruderman went to Slobodka with Rav Shaul Lieberman, and at some point there was some question whether they should be roommates or something, share a dira. So he said, the altar called him in and said, you see the river out there, whatever the river says, you have a choice. If you want to commit suicide, just jump into the river. You don't have to stretch it out by moving into it. He had a sense that... Lieberman
was in Slobodka?
Yeah. Lieberman was a Talmud.
I heard some stories, maybe the altar of Slobodka, there was a big genius that never went by Yeshiva Star, and he used to say nothing will come out of him.
Yeah, things like that. The altar had... everybody says this about the altar of Yaakov Kamenetsky. Everybody said that the altar had this almost spooky ability. He could meet a bacher at 16, and like after 5 minutes he knew what the person would be like in 30-40 years. Like, he just knew. He'll be a Rosh Hashiva, he'll be a posik, he'll be a professor, he'll be an apikar, like he just knew like exactly how the person's life would unfold. He had such a havana of kaichas hanefesh and the like. Okay, alrighty. So that's one issue. So again, one issue about these giorim is the Beis Din kosher. But the other issue is, even if the Beis Din is 100% kosher, remember that Geiris has three steps for a man, two steps for a woman. The three steps for a man is Mila, Tevila, Kabbalas Mitzvahs. For a woman, it's Tevila and Kabbalas Mitzvahs. So here's the problem. Even if the conservative rabbis are 100% Shomer Shabbos and they're kosher to be Dayanim, but what are they asking the person to be makabel? Right? What is a conservative rabbi asking the person to be makabel? What can a reform rabbi be asking, etc.? So there are two different pagamim here. One is a pagam mitzad the dayanim, and the other is a pagam mitzad kabbalas mitzvahs. Okay. Now, what's the problem with Orthodox conversions? So here's the issue. The issue is this. It's an empirical fact that we cannot deny that many people who go through a geiris, they're not keeping mitzvahs. So what do we do? What do we do with that? So what you often see in the Jerusalem Post and other places, they make a statement that's not emes. They'll say, "Oh, what Jewish batei din do is that if a geir stops keeping mitzvahs, they revoke the conversion." Not emes. If somebody had a valid geiris, you cannot be mevatel a geiris because they stopped keeping mitzvahs. A ger who stops keeping mitzvahs is exactly like a Jew who stops keeping mitzvahs. Yisrael afal pi shechata Yisrael. The only way you could be mevatel a geiris because the ger is not keeping mitzvahs is if it could be established that at the time of the geirus he was not mechaven to be mekabel mitzvahs. And then there's a chisaron in the kabbalas mitzvahs. If the kabbalas mitzvahs was sincere, it will not be nifka, because the person stops keeping mitzvahs later. So the shaila that a beis din has to face, and this is a difficult shaila, is when do I say hochiach sofo al techilaso? In other words, when can I say that the fact that he's a mechalel Shabbos is dacharaya that he never intended? It's not the pshat he's a mechalel Shabbos on mavatel megeiros. It has to be an umdana that this is what he thought at the time of the geiros itself. So it depends on a lot of things. Time is going to be a major factor. To give you obvious examples, if the guy was a Shomer Shabbos for 10 years after his geiros, and then he went off the derech, nobody's going to say that's going to be mevatel the geiros. If he does the geiros at 10:30, and then 10:35, he goes to eat chazer in a restaurant, that probably shows he didn't mean it, because people don't change themselves in 2 minutes. Problem is that the cases are not those extremes. The cases are, so...
Does he have to be mekayem everything from the first second?
Okay, so here we have another nekuda. There's a tshuva from Rav Chaim Eiser. That's a very, very important tshuva. It's a big, big yisait. Rav Chaim Eiser was mechalek between kabbalas mitzvahs and shemiras mitzvahs. This is a very, very big yisait. Kabbalas mitzvos means, in order for me to be a valid ger, in order for my geris to be chal, I have to consider the Torah and the halacha, Torah Shebal Peh, to be binding and chiv. And even if because of my yetzer hara, or because of my taivas, let's say, I don't yet have the strength to give up my job on Shabbos, but I'm makir that is the chiyuv of a Jew. So Rav Chaim Eiser says, the chatchila, you're not megayer such a person. You're not megayer. But after the fact, if there's an emistik of Kabbalah, even if he's not a shomer mitzvah, you see his chiddush? In other words, he's, now this is b'dieved, l'chol ha'pachot, when I look at a guy who's not frum. So again, there are two different ways. Either because he doesn't believe in it, or he believes in it, but he's not yet ready to make certain decisions. The Yetzer Hara is too strong. So according to Rav Chaim Eiser, in the cases where somebody is be'emes and a maimon, but they're not a shomer, even if that was borer at the time of the geiros, right? Rav Chaim Eiser says, but the evidence that is a good geiros. But on the other hand, in a lot of these cases, you don't even have that. In a lot of these cases, the pshat is they didn't believe it to begin with. They didn't believe it. They don't believe it. They're
you
doing
the
it.
Person afterwards to say that. Can you ask him? Were you mekabel properly? And depending on his answer.
Well, he may not be naman afterwards, but the pshat is that if we know at the time of the geiros. See again, a lot of Orthodox rabbis did, and maybe still do, is they don't ask. They don't ask. It's kind of what's called don't ask, don't tell. They know the person is not really keeping mitzvahs, and they simply say, are you going to try to be a good Jew? And the person says, yes, I'm going to be a good Jew the way I understand that, what that to me. It's like they don't ask so much. So because of this, the Rabbanut has felt, it's been a big problem, that a lot of geiros from Chutz La'aretz, even from Orthodox rabbis, had a chisaron in Kabbalah's mitzvahs. And a lot of the geiros, the Rabbanut themselves did, had a chisaron in Kabbalah's mitzvahs. And really, tens of thousands of conversions were despondent based on this. Now that's a tremendous hardship, because some of these have children and grandchildren who are tata b'nei taira. You could be learning in Panovich, and then all of a sudden you discover that the gear of your grandmother from Russia is being declared invalid 2 weeks before your daughter's chasna or something. What exactly is supposed to happen at that point? Now let me mention two nekudas of kula here. One point of analysis is Rav Chaim Eiser, which doesn't help in a lot of cases. But Rav Chaim Eiser differentiates between the person who's not makabel and the person that's makabel, but it's not yet ready to keep. Although I'm saying that's not going to help in a lot of cases.
The Bidyevit was okay.
Bidyevit is okay, as long as you're Makabo.
The person has to know that he has to get there at some point.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
He asked from Yisrael when he had to wait because of the winds and all that, yeah. The danger, and tell your Lamaisa he did it, then we're Samech on the...
No, that's true. The Rav Chaim Meiser is also Meiser. Rav Chaim Meiser is also Meiser. We're not Megayer a person until he is ready to do everything from day one. That's true. But b'di'eved legabe, the validity of the gear, if there's a Kabbalah, Rav Chaim Meiser said it was good. Now, the other nekuda is this. The other nekuda is that some poskim say that we have a klal, and Chazal have a klal, Devarim shebelev einam devarim. Now, what does it mean, devarim shebelev einam devarim? Let's say I'm a kaddish and isha, and I have in my mind that I'm doing it on a condition that it's only going to be valid if she's a bas kohen or a bas levi or whatever. But I didn't speak it out as a tanai, right? But it's in my mind. There's a zat tanai. So states that if you would have made the Tanai, the Kedushin would only be Chal on a Tanai. But if you didn't speak it out, it's Devarim Shebelev. And Devarim Shebelev don't count. So some Paiskim have applied this rule to Geiris, and that is, if the Beis Din is convinced, if the Beis Din is convinced that the person is sincere, even if Ali B'Diemus we see a second later, after the Geiris, that we were fooled. Some say the Geiris is valid because his machshava that we were not aware of blibes devorim shebelev einam devorim.
What did he tell us?
He told us, let's say he told us, I mean it. That's devorim shebelev if he didn't mean it. But...
Isn't that a thing of the...
Yeah, yeah. So two things. So according to that kula... According to that kula, as long as he convinced us he was sincere, even if we were fooled, the geirus is chal because it's devarim shebelev. But there are two problems. Rabbi Yashiv says there are two chesronos with that approach. Chisori number one is exactly what you said. You were mechaven, baruch shekivanta. He said that on something where the very definition of the requirement is the mental commitment, it's not shaykh to say devarim shebelev einam devarim. Kabbalas mitzvahs is b'mitzius, the matzav of kabbalah belev. So something that's totally on kabbalah belev, you say devarim shebelev einam devarim. Second point, Rabbi Yashiv said, is that the Gemara in Kedushin itself says when there's an umdana demuchach, meaning, even if you didn't speak it out, but if it's absolutely boror that this is your kavana, then it becomes as if it's not the Devarim Shebelev. So he says, in many of these cases, it's not the pshat, the Beis Din was fooled. The Beis Din knew there was an umdana. The guy was a mechalel shabbos. So b'chiyai gavna, avad is the Devarim Shebelev. The Gemara gives a case where somebody was selling his property because he was moving to Eretz Yisrael. But he didn't make it tonight. He didn't say the mechira is a mechira only if I go. The site, after he sold the property, he couldn't go. So he wanted to be mevatel the mechira and get the property back. So the Gemara wanted to say, Devarim shebelev einam devarim. So you're stuck? Answer, umdana demuchach. Right? So because of this, this is the basis of why the Bati Din invalidated the Geiris. Either because by Geiris bichlal, you don't say Devarim shebelev, or it's an umdana demuchach in a lot of these cases. I mean, there's an afkamina. These two reasons are not interchangeable. Like the first reason, even if we were fooled and there wasn't an umdana, the geirus would be batal. Like the second reason, only when the circumstances were clear. Okay, we'll stop it. Okay.
I mean, you heard that Shlomo Kugler's